Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. On today's show, we're talking about geopolitical stability and the vulnerability of nations. The idea behind globalization was that by creating economic interdependency, the world would become a more peaceful place. Many wars have an economic underpinning, but if both sides in a conflict would be harmed by economic disruption, the incentive for confrontation should be reduced. Turns out that every nation has a weakness when it comes to globalization. No country is an island unto itself that can be fully self-sustaining. So much has been written in recent years about the vulnerabilities that were exposed during the pandemic, which created global supply chain shortages. Then we had the Russian invasion of the Ukraine and the cooling of relations between China and the West. The realization that many companies had sole-sourced their manufacturing in China drove companies to establish security of supply in other geographic regions. For example, Apple established manufacturing in India and has stated that they plan to source 25% of all iPhone production from India. Even some Chinese-owned manufacturers have opened their own plants in Mexico. But still, global interdependencies are everywhere. Nearly 90% of the ingredients for antibiotics consumed today are manufactured in China. In terms of medicinal security, China holds a trump card that could, under the wrong circumstances, be weaponized. Of course, there's nothing proprietary about the manufacture of antibiotics. This is something that, given sufficient time and attention, could be replicated pretty much anywhere in the world. The U.S. has ceded leadership in semiconductor manufacturing to Taiwan Semiconductor, and today Taiwan's TSMC manufactures nearly 58% of the world's chips. The other major Taiwanese manufacturer, UMC, manufactures another 7% of the global total. Together, these two companies control 65% of global semiconductor manufacturing. China's SMIC controls another 6%. Efforts to create more secure supply in North America may not pass the practicality of economics in the industry. Europe is at the mercy of Russia and a few other countries when it comes to energy supply. That is at least one of Europe's economic weaknesses. India is the largest supplier of rice in the world, and these countries that depend on supply of rice from India run the risk of facing food insecurity. China imports about 10 million barrels a day of oil. If China were to be isolated, geopolitically speaking, well, they could be starved for energy. China has also been a net importer of agricultural products since 2004. Between the year 2000 and 2020, the country's food self-sufficiency ratio decreased from 93.6% to 65.8%. That's according to a report released in January by the U.S. Council on Foreign Relations. In an environment of geopolitical tensions, disruptions of energy supply, such as through the Suez Canal, could have a devastating impact for many countries around the world. This is perhaps one of the greatest risks that our world faces in the short term. The greatest risks are food security, energy security, technology security, and healthcare security. If you can't source your favorite article of clothing because of supply chain issues, well, you might be disappointed, but nobody's going to die because you can't get your special tennis shoes. You might be sad, but that's a far cry from food insecurity or energy insecurity. Japan, on the other hand, imports 61% of its food, so that nation's extremely vulnerable to food insecurity in times of global instability. Russia has moved from being a large importer of grain, soybean, and soybean meal during the late Soviet period to being a major grain exporter. The country has become the world's top wheat exporter, supplying 20 to 23% of the total world exports in 2017 and 2018. By contrast, the U.S. has converted 27 million acres of farmland from food production to ethanol production, which is basically going into gasoline tanks of automobiles. I mean, just think about the insanity of that decision. Farmers didn't wake up one morning and say to themselves, I'm going to grow corn for ethanol this year instead of wheat or tomatoes. All of this was the result of government incentives that were created out of federal energy policy and federal agriculture policy. Now, some minerals like uranium are highly concentrated in a few countries. Regardless where it's mined, the refinement of uranium is currently concentrated in Russia and China, which together have 56% of the global uranium enrichment capacity. The U.S. has only 8.3% of the global enrichment capacity. France and Germany are the largest players after Russia and China, and Germany is clearly abandoning its nuclear program. Automotive electronics are sourced from a handful of companies that are based in Japan, Germany, the Netherlands, the US, and France. However, the fabs themselves could be anywhere depending on the chip in question. A single disruption of any of those one sources could cause automotive manufacturing to grind to a halt on a global basis. The manufacturers themselves are sensitive to that risk, and they do maintain an inventory of chips in the supply chain, including distribution, so that they can weather a temporary disruption in supply. So when we speak about counterparty risk, we're often thinking about financial risk. But the world is so interconnected, and the linkages extend far beyond the financial. They extend into the physical. Governments often oversimplify. They try and wallpaper over the problem by doing the expedient thing, which is spending money. But they can print money in an instant. They can't print food, they can't print oil, and they sure can print semiconductor circuits. So as you think about that, have an awesome rest of your day. Go make some great things happen. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.